Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I am your host and radio health evangelist, Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the heart of Hallow Thanksma Show. That's right. We are now in the stretch run. We are ready to celebrate the Thanksgiving part, which, after all, is the slower part of the Hallow Thanksma season. There are no costumes. There is no particular candy or gifts.
And you've eaten a lot.
Yeah. And, well, and that's
so that slows you down.
Yeah.
Or at least it does.
Well, and Thanksgiving, the purpose of Thanksgiving is, one, to shop for Christmas. And two, to decorate for Christmas.
I could have swore it was for giving thanks.
No, it's a shopping preparatory holiday for Christmas. That's what it's for. And so now
I've been doing it wrong.
What have you been doing?
Being thankful. Not shopping.
Tony, do you ever eat at Thanksgiving?
Well, yes. In
between shopping trips?
Well, it's just, you think about Thanksgiving, and it's just sort of, it's a prep for Christmas. You take that day, and you be thankful and all that stuff. But
no,
then
it's
you
just
go
so,
on and...
It's just so you don't go more than a month from Halloween to Christmas.
It is.
Right?
I mean... Not that there's any kind of a letdown. That's the thing. You got to take the Halloween decorations down, put up the Christmas decorations. You need that. Thanks to our listeners at True Talk Internet Radio, here with me to pontificate, and apparently starting early with this particular show, from the University of Kentucky UK Physician Assistant Studies Program, Assistant Professor Shelley Irving. Hi, Shelley.
Hello.
And also from the University of Kentucky, Manager of Communications Infrastructure, to explain to you about our web presence, as he always does, Rick Phillips. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Tony. You know, the audio of the show, Morehead State Public Radio website, WMKY.org. Go there. Take a look at the site. There's lots of good shows there, but specifically, we want you looking at Health Matters. Find Health Matters, find the list of shows, read the summaries, and what you'll find, there's a little nugget in there. You'll find a way to get to the audio. You missed something? Caught the show after it started, maybe had to turn it off, which we don't advise that, but maybe sometimes you have to. Or maybe sometimes you heard something that you want a friend to hear. Send the link to them. But you can get the audio link right there at WMKY.org.
Or if you swallow a toxic substance and need to induce vomiting, audio link right there.
Well, or if you've just gotten done with your Thanksgiving meal and you need something to put you to sleep.
For Thanksgiving. Audio's right there.
It's right
so
there.
So many uses for the Health Matters audio.
We guarantee after one Thanksgiving meal, you can't get 15 minutes into a show without falling asleep. It really doesn't matter which show you pick. Audio of the shows, WMKY.org. But that's not the best part. The best part is, how do you interact? How do we, Health Matters, establish two-way communication? Radio is so one way, but this is a two-way communication. You can actually talk to us. Ask us questions. Give us feedback. Let us know what you think. Let us know what you like, what you don't like. Take a look. We post things out there that are relevant to healthcare and, of course, sometimes relevant to life. But certainly Facebook.com/HM Radio Show is where you'll find that. Gives you an opportunity to participate in Health Matters. Give us some ideas on things you want to hear about. Is there a particular question that you have, or maybe something since the last time you listened to Health Matters has come up and you've gotten around a water cooler conversation about the, for instance, possibly any kind of healthcare plan that might be coming out in the next, 6 to 12 months, and maybe you just don't understand some piece of it, or maybe you have an opinion about it. Bring it to the show. Let us have it. Let Tony chew on it for a while, and you'll be amazed what this guy can bring back. He is one heck of a Googler.
I like that. See, when you chew on things and bring them back, I think
that describes you
again,
perfectly.
Absolutely. That's regurgitation,
so,
health
medicine. Interact with the show, Facebook.com/HM Radio Show.
Our sponsor for today's show, Ladder Safety, reminding you Christmas gets better if you fall off a ladder. That is right. In November and December 2014, there were 12 fatalities and over 14,000 injuries treated in hospital ERs nationwide due to holiday decorations. That's an average of about 240 injuries per day during the holiday season. This holiday thing's
okay?
Really getting me. I'm having trouble with holiday. I don't know why.
I wish you'd put the whiskey down over there.
Getting ready for Thanksgiving. The most common injuries, falls, 36%. Half of those were falls from ladder. Now, if you take half of a third of 240 injuries per day, you got 40 falls per day showing up in the emergency room, people decorating their house. Lacerations, and this is broken ornaments and broken light bulbs and so forth. That's 11%. Back strain, 10%, because you haven't lifted the decorations recently. So we're going to talk today about ladder safety. We've got our top 10 ladder safety tips, as we always have this time of the year. Tip number one, place your ladder on level and firm ground. Use leg levelers, Rick, under the ladder to level uneven or soft ground. Leg levelers, devices you can buy at hardware stores. You got
okay.
Leg levelers?
I don't need them. I've got unlevel legs. Tony, you don't understand. I don't have the problems that somebody that's vertically challenged has.
Okay.
Well, I don't need a ladder.
Okay.
I can change the batteries in the fire and the fire alarms and the I can do all that without a ladder. I can put the top thing on the Christmas tree. As long as it's a 7-foot tree, I'm good to go.
Just pop it on.
Yeah, I don't really need all that ladder stuff.
Tip number two, make sure the ladder can support both your weight and the load you're putting on it by checking its maximum load rating. Always a good idea. Three.
And my ladder in my house will be grateful this Christmas because he will not have to support
That's right.
As much weight.
Rick's lighter on the ladder, one might say.
Lighter on the ladder.
Make sure your straight and adjustable ladders have both slip-resistant feet. Beware of wet leaves and frosty wood. This is a big problem. The feet slipping out from the ladder, especially on the eastern Kentucky, not-so-level surfaces. Be very careful about that. And deck wood is not necessarily the best most tractionary support for ladders. I'll just put it that way. Number four is to set up a straight. Now, this is Rick's favorite tip because he disagrees with it. Set up straight single or extension ladders at a 75-degree angle. You can stand up straight with your toes touching the feet of the ladder. Extend your arms out in front of you. Your palms should touch the top of the rung that is at shoulder level. Otherwise, you can follow the 4-to-1 rule. If you are 4 feet up the ladder, the base should be 1 foot from the wall. If you're 8 feet, 2 feet away from the wall, and so forth. 4-to-1.
I think you're making that up. I don't know why you think I don't like that.
Well, because when I've mentioned it, you say, well, that's really ridiculous that you would sit there and measure the ladder and do your palms and so forth. I have to say, the only time I ever stood with my feet next to the feet of the ladder and put my arms out to see if I had the angle correct was when I first wrote these rules a couple years ago, and I haven't really done that since.
I bet it was longer than that.
Maybe. That's possible. Most of the time when I set a ladder up, I just look and say, yeah, that looks about right. I don't necessarily do the 4-to-1 rule or the palms to the rungs rule.
So basically, you're a rule breaker.
I think this is a great rule for people that aren't as experienced with ladders. For the rank amateur, 4-to-1.
So you're a do as I say, not as I do guy.
When you get experience, no, I can't say that. I mean, let's face it, old people fall off ladders all the time. If experience were the answer, we would have not so many older folks. I have a friend who will not be listening to this show, but he knows who he is, has fallen off a ladder recently as well. Number five, honestly, don't use a metal ladder near power lines or electrical equipment. Do I even have to say this? Wood or fiberglass ladders in these situations, use with caution. No ladder should ever touch a live electric wire. I know you were thinking about it. What if I just leaned the ladder up against these live electric wires and use them for support? But the answer is no, no, no. Do not do that.
So I've got like an 18-foot extension ladder, right? It's not 10-foot. I don't believe extension ladder. I don't think it'll go to a full 20 feet. I'm trying to figure out where you can get a ladder up against a power line. I mean, aren't they? They're traditionally pretty high up. I mean, you really got to want it to do that.
You know, the embarrassing thing is that I can tell you're an amateur Christmas decorator.
No. I'm not even an amateur.
You're probably the guy that just sets up that little rotating light that makes snowflakes on your garage door.
I don't do that. I put a wreath on the door. That's it.
Well, I mean, until you've
decorated. And that's a nail and a hammer. There's nothing involved with that.
I've just got to tell you, until you've decorated
the power lines near your house. I live vicariously through other people's Christmas.
That makes a really showy Christmas decoration. In all seriousness, please do not put your decorations near live electrical wires, even if you can. That's stupid. Now, that's even me stupid.
Did you just call people stupid?
Maybe. In a Trumpian sense. There we go.
What have you? Boy, you've changed since the election.
The real me comes out. But at any rate, that's our first five tips on ladder safety. I'm reminding you, Christmas gets badder if you fall off a ladder. The other thing you've got to worry about, and we have time to discuss this, is the Christmas traffic. No, I am not talking about the shoppers rushing home. Well, I am talking about the shoppers rushing home with their treasures if they are going over 100 miles an hour. After steady declines over the last 4 decades, says the New York Times, November 15th, highway fatalities last year recorded the largest annual percentage increase in 50 years. And this year, even worse, troughed at around 28,000 nationally. In the first 6 months of 2015, we were 17,700 on our way to a well above 30,000 annual traffic death rate in 2016. Why?
Pokemon Go came out in July 2016.
Yeah. So they had to be driving, though. They had to be in a car.
You can drive after those characters, right?
I mean, gosh, I hope not.
Yes, I mean, you basically, you can drive around. And they mentioned that.
I'm obviously, going to petition to have one put by your house.
That would just be nasty, wouldn't it? Somebody you don't like, you just make, put a gym in their front yard or something.
Yeah, you
right?
know, they had these things. I think they called them arenas or places where you could battle. Yeah. One of them ended up being right in the middle of a very populated place on campus, right, like a classroom. And it was a hall. It was one of the big halls that they teach in. It was amazing. It was bad. We had to actually ask them to stop that.
So you asked the Pokemon Go people to stop?
Correct.
They moved the arena or whatever.
I actually don't know what happened to that, but I know the situation came up where there was an arena in one of our very populated areas.
But at any rate, you've got that. The other thing is you've got things like Snapchat that will allow you to post a picture of yourself in a 35-mile-per-hour zone going 115, which is popular among young people. You know, that's a kind of a daredevil thing to do.
Don't you really mean a dumb thing to do?
It is, but you know yourself, Rick. I mean, certainly there are a lot of things to distract you
Tony,
your automobiles now.
When I was young and I exceeded the speed limit slightly, I at least kept both hands on the wheel.
And
doesn't that make up for it?
Sure. The question is, and I'll accept that as a bit of frivolity in the show.
Mm-hmm. I didn't do it in Kentucky.
Yeah. But the other thing is, you know, it may not be where your hands are, but where your mind is. That is, you may have hands-free apps. You may have both hands on the wheel. You're barking out orders to your car dashboard. It is dictating, taking memos, calling people, and so forth. The question may not be
where you're... In 1985, my dashboard wouldn't listen to me.
I understand. Your dashboard was just mute back then. But let's fast forward to 2016. There's a lot of things that go on in the car besides driving. In adult cars.
Correct.
In minivans. There's a lot of things that go on with besides driving. And this may be the problem. Just beware that the person that's next to you in the road may or may not be paying attention.
So really, I mean, get to the meat of that. I mean, the fatalities are, I mean, you would think with modern cars getting more safe, the roads being updated with newer technology in the blacktop, you would think that you'd like to see that go down, right?
Something's wrong.
Something's there is something. Wrong. So we need to be careful.
Yeah. Something has changed. There has been a U-turn, so to speak, in our fatalities, which have been steadily decreasing. And driver distraction seems to be a pretty high item among a lot of both insurance companies and also safety experts. This may be the problem, is we got too much stuff in the dashboard, not enough stuff on the road right now to keep our attention. We've got too much stuff to talk about in our next fractional portion. We're going to take a break and rest up because it's going to be a big one. You're listening to Health Matters on Moorhead State Public Radio.
Hello and welcome back. This is the second fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver, and with us from the University of Kentucky is Shelley Irving. Hi, Shelley.
Hello.
And this is the Heart of Hallow Thanksgiving show. That's right. We are in the home stretch. We are taking down the Thanksgiving decoration, the Halloween decorations, putting up the Christmas decorations. We call that in America Thanksgiving.
Do you leave your Halloween up that long?
You know, at some point,
because you lean a casket up next to your door, right? Don't you? Don't you have like a coffin there?
We've got pumpkins, and we roll the pumpkins down the hill. This is the annual roll the pumpkins down the hill, and the dogs go get them, and they bring them back up and chew on them for
a while. Obviously don't have very big pumpkins.
Well, they roll down
or
the hill.
Or really big dogs.
Yeah, well, no, the pumpkins roll down the hill and bust, and then the dogs go get pieces of them and bring them back up to the front yard, as dogs are wont to do.
So yeah,
and so we got a yard full of pumpkin pieces. We got to get rid of those.
How do you make pumpkin pie out of those then? Do you have grass in your pumpkin
waiter,
pie?
My pumpkin pie has a dog in it. I don't know. No, those
isn't that
are
the only reason that pumpkins exist? Pumpkin pie?
No, I think jack-o'-lantern is a better use for a pumpkin than pie. I am not a big pumpkin pie fan. It's
well,
a
you're
sort of
a little
thing,
pumpkin
it's
pie.
Like, yeah, I know. Thank you. It's it is. It's sort of like Jell-O. You know, if you don't put something in it, it's just really not worth eating.
What? You're crazy.
You call me crazy. This is the first time we've had so many disagreements. You've never called me crazy before. All right, Shelley, it's up to you. Arbitrator. Yeah. Jell-O. Plain Jell-O.
I like pumpkin pie.
And I like her. Way to go, Shelley. Okay. She's on my side this week.
It just seems just a waste of pie. If you're going to eat pie, should be tasty.
Tony, I'm going to give you some advice. Kind of, okay?
Yeah.
This is advice.
All right.
Okay? Anything that you can put whipped cream on is worthy.
We'll take that as personal advice from Rick, our sponsor for the second time. Ladder Safety reminding you Christmas gets badder if you fall off a ladder. We are up to number 6. Check the rung locks and spreader braces on your ladder to make sure they are set. Please don't climb the ladder and find up halfway up that you really didn't set those rung locks and the ladder starts retracting at the very time you need it to remain put. 7, and this is a dream around the Weaver household, have a helper hold the bottom of the ladder. I'm pretty much on my own with ladders.
Okay.
You?
Well, Tony, we've been friends for many years. You don't seem to call me. Oh, I'd hold the ladder
can you
for
come
you.
Out?
I would hold the ladder for you.
You would hold it the way Lucy holds a football. I would. You see Rick pulling out his phone and turning the camera on, and then you know you're about
hey,
to be.
Hey, watch this.
Yeah.
We're about to go Facebook Live.
That's right. We're going on TV. We're going to get the $10,000 prize. Okay. So, but at any rate, you have a helper.
How come you don't get a front end loader for your tractor and just have somebody raise you up and just forget the whole ladder thing?
I would not trust the person raising me up. I have trust issues. I absolutely do. When it comes to getting in a bucket and letting someone else loft me up into the gutter area.
I'd do it.
No, you'd do it. That was, if you notice, that was never, did I say, no one will do it. I said, I would trust them. That's the thing. One person on the ladder at a time. Oh, yeah, your helper holds at the bottom, but they're not supposed to be climbing up there with you or anything like that. 9, perhaps our most famous ladder recommendation of all time. If you have a belt on, the belt buckle should be inside the rails of the ladder at all times. If your belt buckle is outside the rails of the ladder, that means you are leaning over too far. You are in danger of falling. So keep your
belt
buckle.
That's good advice.
That's great advice.
That's something I learned on Health Matters, and that's a great tip. Mm-hmm.
And then finally, do not stand on the top 3 rungs of a straight, single, or extension ladder. Not enough to hold on to if you're on those top 3 rungs. Please just let that section of the lights be a little lower than perhaps you had originally anticipated, but don't do that. That's our sponsor, Ladder Safety, reminding you Christmas gets badder if you fall off a ladder. Now, I have 3 interrelated articles here, and they are about drugs, Rick, but don't worry. It's not about a specific drug. It's about drug prices.
Okay.
I wanted to kind of run through these to make a point here. The first one, Medicare and Medicaid they've released their data on prescription medications and prescription prices. Total prescription drug costs for 2015, $500 billion, 16.7% of personal health care spending. That's up from $367 billion, or 15.4% back in 2012. Annual growth averaged 6.7% through 2025. These drug prices are going to continue to put pressure on families and on programs that cover drugs. Medicaid, the top spending on Medicaid in 2015, number one at $2.2 billion with a B dollars nationally. Harvoni, the hepatitis C drug.
84,000 a case,
84,000
right?
A pop. 84 to 96,000, and you may need to take an extended course. Then number two, and by the way, that is a new number one at $2.2 billion. Abilify had been Medicaid's top expenditure for a long time. That is a schizophrenia, bipolar, depression drug. It's $2 billion, but it is $200 billion less for nationally Medicaid than the Harvoni. The third one, it's been 100 years since Drs. Banting and Best discovered insulin. 100 years later, Lantus insulin is the number 3 most expensive drug for Medicaid. Total expenditures of $1.4 billion.
Wow.
100 years ago, we found insulin, and basically through revisions and patent extensions and so forth, we are still paying $1.4 billion for insulin. That is a crime against nature. Mm-hmm. It is and in the free clinics, there are 2 things you cannot get. One is an inhaler, 2 is insulin, mm-hmm. and this is abominable. Mm-hmm. Humira is number 4. That is for Crohn's disease, for arthritis, and also psoriasis, $805 million. And then something called Vyvanse, a drug I am not that familiar with. It is for attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, ADHD. That's $783 million. And again, Medicaid, a lot of the Medicaid recipients are children, so it would make sense that drug was number 5. Ativan, lorazepam, this is a drug that's been around forever. We have used it since I was a resident, which is a long time ago. The average unit cost increase between 2014 and 2015, 1,264%. Yeah, it's just one of those drugs, again, just jacked up. And total Medicaid spending on 20 drugs with the highest increase, more than doubled between 2014 and 2015. So what we're seeing then is a combination of these expensive hepatitis drug combinations plus the generic drugs are skyrocketing. So across the board, drug costs are at break bank levels. You go to Medicare, their top drug, also Harvoni. Their second one, also Lantus insulin. Crestor, the cholesterol drug, by the way, Harvoni, $7 billion nationally for Medicare. And frankly, just getting started because we're starting to identify more cases of hepatitis and we're starting to treat more. It's going to be, this is going to be a bank breaker. That's all you can say. Again, the Lantus, $4.4 billion. Crestor was $2.9 billion. And then there are two breathing medicines, Advair Diskus, which is one type of an inhaler, $2.3 billion, and Spirevo, another type of inhaler, $2.2 billion. So these drugs, then the cost increases on these drugs is, as I said, at bank-breaking level. No matter what happens. And the reason why, that's the frustrating part, the reason why is because these companies can. Quite simply, the reason these drugs have taken off since 2014 is more Americans have insurance coverage since 2014, and they're able to pull these high prices. So they can bleed Medicaid, they can bleed Medicare, they can buy their way in with copay assurance, they can buy their way into private insurance, and they can set these astronomically high prices, and they can get them because we can't negotiate with them because we are by statute not allowed to as a government. That will you take any healthcare system, and I'm sorry I said I wouldn't do politics, but you take the Affordable Care Act, even if it were fixed so that it actually worked, if you take whatever Trump's going to put in place, if you take any European system, if you cannot negotiate drug prices, your system will crash. So they will crash any healthcare system we put in place unless we fix this, and right now we're not fixing it.
Didn't we talk about this though? Didn't both candidates actually agree on this that allowing this import of it was actually the right thing to do?
Yeah, they said they would allow importation.
Both of them did.
Yeah,
it was the one thing we found that was common to them.
Yeah, as a platform issue, they said they would. I think both of them are extremely upset with them. And we'll see if Donald Trump can do one thing, if he can get the ability to negotiate those drug prices. But keep in mind, collectively, these people have more money than the government does.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so it's going to be very difficult. But unless that happens, nothing else will happen. And here's another spin on that, Rick, which is why I mentioned there are three articles. This was actually October 24th in the BMJ, formerly the British Medical Journal. I'm sorry, it was published November 9th. It was I first caught it October 24th. The five-year survival in adults with cancers has increased from 49% to 68% over the past 40 years. It's a 20% increase in survival of people who have cancer. That's a really good thing.
That's excellent. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there have been advances in chemotherapy for melanoma, thyroid cancer, prostate cancer. Here's the problem. 90% of the people, lung cancer, colorectal cancer, breast cancer, the drug therapy increased the five-year survival by less than 2.5%. Overall benefit around 3 months for these big cancers that are very common and very deadly. And if you look, now that was in 2004, but if you look at drugs approved, 48 drugs approved between 2002 and 2014, their median survival benefit, 2.1 months. So it looks like that 20% survival benefit we were talking about is mainly about early diagnosis and early treatment or supportive treatment more than these drugs. And this person, the author of this, who's Peter Weiss, he's at Charing Cross Hospital in London, United Kingdom, he says this raises ethical questions. We have all these expensive drugs and some of these, top-of-the-line expensive things. You're talking $100,000 a year. How far do they get with these solid tumors like lung cancer, breast cancer, and so forth? He pointed out in the research, 3% of cancer patients participate in trials. We extrapolate that to the other 97%. We used to talk about the overall survival, but that was too hard to measure in a clinical trial. So now we talk about progression-free survival, meaning the tumor's not getting any bigger, or maybe tumor shrinkage. Now, you still have cancer. You're still going to die. Your cancer is a little bit smaller, and you have a boatload of side effects. So has that, in fact, contributed to your overall happiness, this progression-free survival they're talking about? And they even mentioned that back in 2010, the FDA figured out that 45% of cancer drugs that were approved based on progression-free survival turned out not to give any overall survival benefit. That is, your cancer is smaller, but you die anyway. And whether you die with a small cancer or a big cancer doesn't seem to matter. Why does the FDA approve? Here's something chilling. If you look at the taxes on the cancer industry's 22% profit margins, the U.S. government got $3.8 billion in 2015 from these drugs. So the U.S. government, which is in charge of approving these drugs, in fact, is pocketing a huge amount of money by the approval.
Well, what if they put all that money into smoking cessation?
Yeah.
or some other prevention.
You're exactly right. U.S. cancer treatment now represents a major cause of personal bankruptcy. And again, these drugs do have side effects. The other thing, patients overestimate the benefits. There was one study, 75% of patients with metastatic colorectal and lung cancer thought their cancers were going to be cured by chemotherapy. Yet, I will tell you, once colorectal or lung cancer gets metastatic, cure is virtually unknown. But 75% of the patients thought they were going to be cured. And you know yourself that the idea of stopping medicine is equivalent to giving up.
Yeah,
that's the thing. You either treat it with these expensive medicines or you give up. There are no other options. And I've put a couple of things on our Facebook page on the so-called war on cancer. Are you going to surrender in the war on cancer? Or are you going to say nuts and go on and get more expensive drugs? But if someone told you this thing will make you live 2 months longer, we may be able to equal that by just providing you with really good supportive care, and this thing's going to bankrupt your family. Do you think we would have the kind of cancer chemotherapy that we're doing today? Maybe people might consider giving up to be a better option in terms of protecting their family and also in terms of their own health.
Yeah, but I think, Tony, the real problem is while we have statistics here talk about 2 months or 3 months, you know, those are statistical averages. And, you know, the problem is this is an emotional decision, and I could be the one that gets 3 years, not 3 months. And so it's really difficult to put a family in that position and say, well, it could be 2 months, could be 3 years. We really don't know. And so, I mean, it's very difficult to take the emotion out of these decisions, and the emotion is what causes us to make bad decisions. And it's interesting, in one of my recent things I had to study, it was talking about how emotions drive bad decisions, right? It's why we can't get away from a craps table or we gamble, because the emotion is driving that, right? So, again, there's got to be a way to be able to provide information that is not going to be that can essentially take out some of the emotion, right?
It's really tough. You're right. And by the way, this editorial comment, Rick is going back to college.
Right.
He's taking college classes as if he didn't have enough to do. But I assume that's where that information that it came from. You are right, though. But we face this all the time. There are very expensive Alzheimer's drugs that may be preventing people from getting worse or maybe doing nothing at all. We don't know. And you have to make a decision for your loved one based on that lack of knowledge. It's very frustrating. But when you think about how much money we're sinking into these drugs and into these expensive high-tech treatments and what we could do with that money, frankly, it's disturbing. It's mm-hmm. very disturbing.
And it's a near impossible thing to deal with.
Two additional thoughts. I'll quote Peter Weiss here at the end. Intensified prevention, early detection, more prompt and radical treatment of localized cancer, together with highly skilled earlier supportive care, are important yet underfinanced priorities in cancer control. That's what he says. And he says the bar for approval needs to be raised. They need to provide a survival benefit. We can't keep using these surrogate endpoints like the tumor's not getting any bigger, Alzheimer's disease is not getting any worse. We need to see survival benefits in these drugs if you're going to start people on expensive drugs with side effects. And I will point out, finally, this is not him, but this is me. None of these things is addressed in the so-called cancer moonshot that we've been so critical of. Yes, they will collect data that maybe we can take the emotions out, as Rick mentioned, but I still think, you know, based on my experience with cancer patients, and Shelley, you've seen as much of this as I have, the problem is the cancer patients are always hoping for that they are the miracle. So statistics, percentages, and so forth don't mean a whole lot when you are praying for a miracle, because the percentages that a miracle would happen are by definition pretty small.
Right.
Yeah, it's frustrating. I've got a couple minutes here. Let me just skim through this and very quickly, because I found this. This was in the BMJ, same thing, British Medical Journal, Quality and Safety. They looked at data from hospitals, patients, and nurses in Europe, surveyed 13,000 nurses, 243 acute care hospitals, 18,000 patients in 182 of those hospitals were surveyed as well. The nurses in the hospitals which had higher levels of nursing, that is, more registered nurses, fewer certified nursing assistants involved in patient care, they were less likely to report poor quality care, lower patient safety, high burnout, and job dissatisfaction. They were more likely to recommend their hospitals. They were less likely to report problems including pressure ulcers or falls. Here is a number. You want a statistic, Rick. If you substitute a nurse assistant for a registered nurse for 25 patients, there is a 21% rise in the risk of one of those patients dying. Now, this is not a slam on certified nursing assistants. It's just simply saying if you put any person in a work position where you are stretching their qualifications, you're going to see problems. And I think we can all agree on that.
Sure. I mean, that same void or would exist between a nurse and a PA and a PA between a doctor and a doctor. I mean, certain specialties between doctors. I mean, each one of these has a margin between them and the skill set below them.
And here's where it gets difficult. If we, in fact, spend all of our money on expensive drugs and we save money by shorting people on the people taking care of them, which is what we're doing in this country,
right.
In fact,
mm-hmm.
We're trying to provide minimalist patient contact. We're trying to provide minimalist care, minimalist people in order to be able to provide these overpriced drugs, then we have made a choice. We have said we would rather have the technology than the people. And I think in aggregate then, absent a miracle, which we're apparently that's the way medical care goes now. We're praying for miracles. Absent a miracle, we're providing poor quality care. We need to pull that money back and put it into the people.
Yeah, we've been fed, and this is coming from the technology guy, we've been fed a bill of goods that suggests that technology should reduce your workloads and your staff, and that's just not the case. All technology does is increase the scope of what you can do.
You know, and this is going to be difficult. We will need to reorganize our thinking on medical care and get away from the high-tech miraculous stuff and start doing the basic stuff that we need to live. Otherwise, we're not going to make improvements. We simply cannot make improvements with more and more expensive drugs with marginal benefits. Speaking of marginal benefits, we've finished another section of Health Matters. Why not take a break?
Reorganize
your thing. Yeah, celebrate. For goodness sakes, it's the holidays. And come back for our third and final fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Hello and welcome back. This is the third and final fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. And Shelley.
Hello.
Thanks.
You can say, boy, Shelley, Tony, you changed the format up pretty quick there. Shelley, this is how he treats us.
Give her a chance to introduce herself, but she's Shelley. She only says two words, or that's the absolute max. This is the Heart of Halifax show. We are celebrating the fact that we're not celebrating yet Christmas, and we've already celebrated Halloween. And for some of us, this is truly a time of Thanksgiving, a time that we give thanks, as the pilgrims did, for the things we've had during the year. But we at Health Matters can't be bothered by that kind of stuff. We've got to get
lights. We got a show to do.
We got lights in the gutter. We got we've got ladder safety to worry about and so forth. Our sponsor for the final time, Ladder Safety, reminding you Christmas gets better if you fall off a ladder. And here are our 10 ladder safety tips. Number one, put it on level and firm ground. Use leg levelers under the ladder to level uneven or soft ground. I have driven some pegs in at time to make sure, because our house is on a hillside. The level ground is hard to come by. But make sure that you have that ladder firmly anchored. There's no chance that it will slide out from under you. Make sure that it is leveled before you start climbing. Number two, make sure it can support your weight. Check the maximum load rating. Number three, make your straight and adjustable ladders. Make sure they have slip-resistant feet. Beware of frosty wood. You put that thing on the deck if it is frosty or if it is wet, and the deck may not have the coefficient of friction necessary to keep you and that ladder upright. Number four, use the 75-degree angle for the ladder, and we have two rules for that. One is the 4-to-1 rule. Every 4 feet up needs 1 feet out from 1 foot out from the house. And then the other one is if you put your feet against the feet of the ladder, your palm should touch the top rung that's at shoulder level. Or you can just eyeball it like I do, and then eventually you will get in trouble, as Rick has pointed out.
Yep.
Number five, don't use a metal ladder near power lines or electrical equipment. Stick with wood or fiberglass ladder. No ladder should ever touch a live electric wire. Even if you can, don't do that. Six, check to make sure the rung locks and spreader braces on your ladder. Make sure they are all set before you begin climbing. Again, there are two, not one, but two rung locks on these extension ladders. Make sure they are both set and they will not suddenly shift while you are, in fact, up on the ladder. Number seven, have a helper. Santa has them. Why can't you? to hold the bottom of the ladder. Number eight, one person on the ladder at a time. Number nine, our favorite ladder tip of all time, keep your belt buckle between the rails. If your belt buckle is outside the rails, you are leaning over too far and you are in danger of falling. Number 10, don't stand on the top three rungs. That's our sponsor, Ladder Safety. Christmas gets better if you fall off a ladder. Rick, I'm going to take a moment now to talk about the election and Zika.
Do we really have to?
And mosquitoes.
I'd rather talk about Zika at this point. You know how I love that.
Yeah. Rick, now this was from the two reports from completely different sections of the American Society of Tropical Medicine and Hygiene in Atlanta. One, and this is frightening, they found mosquitoes can infect people with Zika and chikungunya, our two least favorite viruses. They can do that at the same time. Colorado State University researchers discovered that the Aedes aegypti, that's the mosquito that we all hate, it can carry both Zika and chikungunya viruses in at levels that would infect humans. And number two, researchers in northeastern Brazil identified severe neurological problems in patients treated during a rare and unprecedented simultaneous outbreak of Zika, chikungunya, and dengue in 2015. So what we're saying is these mosquito bites are no longer a mild nuisance. Mosquito bites are to be battled. Mosquitoes themselves are to be fought on land, on sea, and in the air. You need to fight mosquitoes because they can kill you. If that's not bad enough, this was Wall Street Journal, November 14th. The West Nile virus is more deadly than we thought. Back in between 1999 and 2015, you take all the people who were infected with West Nile in the U.S., 4% of them died. In Texas, between 2002 and 2012, 13% of people with West Nile virus died. So either Texans are wimps, which we have no other evidence for, or the West Nile virus may have changed between 1999 and 2012, 2015. There was an outbreak, apparently, of a more vicious. Now, the other thing is there may be a co-infection with other viruses. I mean, if Zika, chikungunya, dengue can travel together, could West Nile, in fact, travel with other viruses, which amplify its... these viruses all have a neurologic component to them. The West Nile causes an irritation of the brain and encephalitis. The Zika causes something called Guillain-Barré, which is an irritation, immune irritation of your spinal cord. Chikungunya, of course, causes the muscle aches. And so they all have these things, and if they combine, it could be more deadly. This is not good news. So that's where the election comes in. Voters in Florida voted. The Florida Keys elected to have the British biotech company Oxitec release millions of genetically modified mosquitoes to combat the virus. The genetic modification is they will mate, but they will, but their offspring do not grow up into adult mosquitoes. So they have the Peter Pan gene.
Nice.
And they will never grow up. Never grow up, as a matter of fact. The FDA approved the field trial back in August, but we needed voter approval. And so constituents of Monroe County, encompassing Florida Keys and the southwestern tip of the state's mainland, gave it the go-ahead. Florida Keys turns out to be an ideal place, and this is a little bit like one of those old horror stories. It's good to do this on an island because that way you're able to kind of control the mosquito population on the island. I mean, sure, cars will bring them from the mainland and so forth, and boats and so forth, but for the most part, you have a closed population, whereas you're not sure if you can actually gain control of the Florida mainland. The Oxitec mosquitoes need to be, and I am actually reading this from the journal Science, they need to be sex-crazed enough to deaden the gene pool.
How do you promote that?
Yeah.
So here's the thing. So there is a referendum, a voter referendum, and I would like to see that referendum. We're going to release sex-crazed, genetically modified mosquitoes on your island and see what happens. What do you think? Yay or nay?
And apparently the people of Key West were so excited, they said yes.
Well,
yes.
You know, but the thing is, I mean, Zika is deadly. Zika is deadly. And particularly to pregnant women. You know, it's worse than deadly in a sense because you have a child that can never grow up normally, never take care of themselves. This is a very serious infection. And so I suppose extreme measures are warranted. I don't know how it was presented. I don't know who lobbied for it. I'm sure people lobbied against it. But in one way or another, they did agree. They voted to release sex-crazed, that was the word they used, genetically modified mosquitoes. And we don't know what's going to happen. It may be that we can almost eliminate the Aedes aegypti, and then some other mosquito obviously is going to fill in. It's not like you can't make the world mosquito-free. That's not possible.
But I don't want my world filled with sex-crazed mosquitoes.
No, well, what about sex-crazed
because everybody's
mosquitoes
arm,
with the
no.
Peter Pan gene that they never grow up?
Even worse, it's an 18-year-old, right?
Sex-crazed middle school mosquitoes. They tell fart jokes, and they
I mean, come on, Tony.
brought it up.
I was thinking with Zika, you know, first of all, we've had this discussion. I don't plan on getting anyone pregnant in the next 6 months or year or lifetime.
And I am sure that Francis is glad to hear that.
Right. And so the point is then, I really, you know, Zika for me, there's a chance of this Guillain-Barré. There's always a chance of that. But honestly, I don't worry too much about that. But now the question is, well, do I go to the Florida Keys where all those middle school mosquitoes are sitting there making fart jokes? I'm not sure I want to be around those kind of mosquitoes.
You know, they don't like you anyway, let's be honest. You have the luxury of these
mosquitoes don't like me.
Yeah, you're not one that gets bit all the time.
You're right.
I know too much about you for this to be interesting.
All right, but look, we got somebody new. We got Shelly. So Shelly, mosquitoes.
Yes.
Are you alive?
Yeah. Do they eat you alive?
Yes, they do. They eat me
Send
alive.
Her.
Yeah.
Yeah. They
Send
do.
Her.
I need lots of Benadryl if I'm in a mosquito infested area.
So do you take precautions? You use DEET or things like that, or
it doesn't matter. It doesn't seem to help.
When you're so sweet, you cannot use DEET. Mosquitoes love her, and this is the kind of gal that she is, the kind of gal a mosquito would love. They did mention, I saw another review of mosquitoes, kind of interesting, pointing out that these different mosquitoes really have entirely different lifestyles. One of the things about the Aedes aegypti, this is the one that hangs around your porch, and it will bite you around the ankles more. The Albopticus, the other one, apparently the tiger mosquito is a pretty vicious biter. It just lands and bites wherever it lands. But the point about the aegypti is if it hangs around the porch, it likes to lay its eggs in your flower pots, and of course in tires that are in the backyard, but hang out the porch. If you try to fog it with a machine driving down the street, that's going to fog the front yard. It's not going to really get where the mosquito likes. So foggers, those car foggers that fog neighborhoods, are not particularly effective against this virus. And that's kind of interesting when you think about how they were trying to fog the Miami area. I think that's probably one thing they learned, is that's probably not the way to get this mosquito under control.
Right.
They could not. We wondered why they could not clear basically a small area north of Miami. And one of the reasons is I think we were probably using the wrong techniques at the time. But I just saw a review in the American Journal of Medicine about mosquito prevention efforts saying you'd have to really look at them individually. What this means is look around your house. You know, if there are those water sources, there are ponds, pots, gutters that don't drain all the way, certainly tires, things like that. Try to empty out as much of that as you can. The other thing is those larvicide things work pretty well. You know, those little, like, lifesavers that put in still water and they dissolve, those things work pretty well, and they're not toxic to the environment. They use hormones. They don't use harsh chemicals.
I plant citronella plants around my house, and that helps some.
You think it? I've heard that it works. You would swear by the citronella. You feel like you have, and you would be the expert, being the mosquito bait that you are.
Yeah, I think it does help.
Okay, So there's another possibility. Citronella. It's kind of interesting. I've looked back at DEET. You know, I've had a lot of difficulty understanding how DEET works. And if you don't know how DEET works, well, join.
Neither does Tony.
Yeah, join a large number of scientists and me. There was some thinking that it was the smell, that it sort of counteracted human smells so that the mosquito couldn't find you. It is possible it binds to their antenna so they can't receive smells, and they lose that ability then to hone in on you based on smell. They can still get you based on heat, but maybe not smell. But at any rate, citronella then would be something that sort of thing may confuse their sense of smell and may offer some benefit. This is going to be a tough nut to crack, and I'll be interested to see going forward what these genetically modified mosquitoes do. But they have been authorized now. The only place, there were two precincts that didn't vote for it in this area, and one of them was actually where they were going to release them. So right now they're having to move their release site, which may slow things down a little bit.
They're still not going to be able to keep them out of those precincts.
You know, once you get a gang of sex-starved mosquitoes, you know, you...
Sex-craved. Let's be honest.
Yeah, yeah. You don't know where they're going to end up, honestly.
They're not starved. They're craved.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's true. Anyway, that's just one...
That's what we do at Health Matters. We're accurate, if anything. Right?
You know, I don't know.
We try not to lie.
Genetically modified mosquitoes being released in the Florida Keys. You need to know about it. Then you decide what to do about it, which I have no idea. Honestly, I would go to the Keys if I wanted to go to the Keys. I don't think that would stop me.
The Keys is such a nice place. I mean, you've been there, right?
I have, and I didn't like it as much as you did. You like Key West, which I am too old. I did not like Key West. I thought Key West was a mess.
You didn't like walking around with free-range chickens?
you got your free range chickens, you got your tattoo places, you got your T-shirts, you got that conch train.
And who won't? Who wouldn't like the conch train?
You got my
the southernmost
hated
point
the conch
in the
train.
U.S.
I know. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, Ernest Hemingway lived.
Ernest Hemingway. If you walk down to the other end of the street, you can see where Hemingway, and then you're done. And I mean, Hemingway's house is nice, but it's a house, and that's it. The other problem is the tour boats. They all stop there. Cruise ships. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Tour boats.
The bad thing is
I know what you meant.
You're just being Mr. Accuracy, and that's just ruining the show. You've been to Key West?
No, I haven't, actually.
Don't go.
It's not sounding real appealing to me right now.
No, I will tell you, in general,
you won't
know
what the mosquito's doing, whether it's biting you or otherwise.
I was having fun going through the Keys. I got key lime pie everywhere I went to see where the best key lime pie was. So I had a project, which I always like, and we ate at some excellent restaurants, and then we got to Key West, and I just felt let down.
He made a list. That's his problem.
I know Largo's fine, and you go. I mean, a lot of those are great keys. I tell you, but not Key West. Sorry about that. But back to business now, and this is a serious one. The Consumer Product Safety Commission. Those stumble bums, bumble rubber baby bunkie, bubby. Shelley said I couldn't do it. I said sure I can do it. The problem is the stumble bums at the Consumer Product Safety Commission bumble the rubber baby buggy bumper ban. There you go. They bumbled the rubber baby buggy bumper ban. That's what they did. Here's the problem. The Consumer Product Safety Commission recommended avoiding crib bumpers, but did not ban crib bumpers, and they should have. The American Academy of Pediatrics says there is enough evidence to ban them from the marketplace. The CPSC will be developing a performance standard for crib bumpers in 2018, which is, if you think about something you need to ban, a performance standard just really is bad. Here's what the American Academy of Pediatrics says. They said, if you put infants to sleep in environments that trigger sudden infant death syndrome, that is environments where they're surrounded by plush toys, they can get their head in a corner where they can't breathe, there are blankets, there are pillows, there are all those things, they're going to die. 3,500 babies die in U.S. every year of SIDS and sleep-related accidents, including strangulation and suffocation. So we need to make it simpler and easier. Here's the American Academy of Pediatrics recommendations, and these are great. They recommend babies sleep in the same room but not the same bed as the parents, ideally for the first year of life, at least for the first 6 months. A little rough on the parents having the baby in the room, but better than a baby monitor, safer than a baby monitor. If you do that, they said you can decrease your risk of sudden infant death syndrome by as much as 50%. Now, it's not common, but still, 50% reduction. Room sharing improves outcomes up to age one, but at least for the first 6 months. Couches and armchairs, terrible place for infants to sleep. Don't do that. They roll over, they get into a crack, they're done. That's bad. Number two, and I think we all know this now, children should always sleep on their backs until they're 1 year old. If they learn how to roll over, fine. Let them roll over. That's not a problem. But until they learn how to roll over, put them on their back. Three, and this is key, put them on a firm sleep surface, a mattress or a safety-approved crib, covered by a fitted sheet with no other bedding or soft objects to reduce the risk of SIDS. Keep soft objects such as pillows, pillow-like toys, quilts, comforters, sheepskins, loose bedding, blankets, non-fitted sheets away from them, and that includes the rubber baby buggy bumpers.
You'd get it right once.
Mm-hmm. I did. I feel bad that I didn't get it right the first time. Maybe we'll redo the show and I'll get it right when we redo the show.
Nope.
Two things here. One is you want your baby then to have a very unobstructed area to sleep. And grandparents, this is important. You fill that thing up with plush toys, you're actually endangering your grandchild. The other thing is you don't have to buy all that crap.
What'd you just say?
You don't have to buy all that crap.
Okay. What do you have to buy?
A fitted sheet.
Nice.
Yeah.
You're getting off easy, aren't you? I see what you're doing. You're getting ready for Christmas. You're going to have very little purchases in your family, right? Yeah. Don't you have a little one? Don't you have a little grandbaby?
I get the kid a college CD or something
like
that.
Yeah, I see.
You just don't do that. We buy too much stuff, and then we fill the infant's bed up with it, and that's a problem. Let me get through this last one. Give them a pacifier. It drops the risk of SIDS when they sleep. Breastfeeding drops the risk. And finally, you should not leave them to sleep in the house in car seats, bouncers, swings, or strollers. Put them in the bed if you have that opportunity. Rick, get us off the air before I do something stupid.
Special thanks to our Morehead State Public Radio producer, Brian Courtney, and to Eric Bilber, who wrote our Health Matters theme song, and to you, our loyal radio fans. Remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. To listen to the show, go to WMKY.org, or visit us on Facebook. Just do a search for HM Radio Show.
For our radio crew and the supportive folks at the Northeast AHEC, thanks for listening to our show. And remember,
for more than 18 years, Christmas has helped people suffering from depression and certain anxiety conditions, but Christmas is not for everyone.
At Christmas, patients of all ages should be monitored appropriately and observed closely for clinical worsening, suicidality, or unusual changes in behavior.
Anyone considering the use of Christmas, or any other holiday for that matter, in a child or young adult must balance this risk with the clinical need.
Drinking alcohol while taking Christmas is not recommended.
Do not stop Christmas without first talking to your healthcare provider.
Stopping Christmas may cause serious symptoms including anxiety, irritability, high or low mood, feeling restless or sleepy, headaches, sweating, nausea, dizziness, electric shock-like sensations, and confusion.
All decisions regarding Christmas must be made with a healthcare provider.
Absolutely.
Considering the unique characteristics of the patient.
Whatever you do, do not take this stuff lying down. Get out this week, make a healthy change in your life, and tune in next week for more exciting news from the world of health information on Morehead State Public Radio.